Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Clay Travis joins us every Friday at 11, presented by the Home Loan Expert, and he joins us now. Clay, how are you, man? How are book sales?
Phenomenal. I mean, well, first of all, if you ever get in a situation where you write a book, you'll inevitably end up, I don't know how many times I've clicked refresh on the Amazon book rankings. You know, they update them like every hour. So I can give you literally an up-to-the-minute number. Because I'm sitting in front of my computer right now, and we are 4 days into the release, and at this exact moment, my book, Republicans Buy Sneakers 2, is the 63rd most popular book in the country on Amazon's book sales chart. So we should be, if it were just going by raw numbers, we would be one of the 10 best-selling books in America in the New York Times bestseller list, not this weekend, but the weekend after when they get the final data. Now they do a
little
bit.
Well, let me guess.
Different.
They're out to get you, so they're going to leave you off the list, right?
No, I was exactly going to lay it out. I mean, they do a system that is not a direct reflection of how many books get sold. So, I don't know why they don't just do the straight up most sold books in America in the New York Times bestseller list. They have an algorithm that's predicated on, they take a bunch of random different stores across the country and then create a synopsis of what the best-selling books are. So if they just go by, we should be on the list. If I'm not on the list, it's because they're not listing the 10 best-selling books in America. So to answer the question, it's gone phenomenally well, infinitely better than I ever could have expected. Now I've done kind of all the promotion I can do for the book. By the way, we're going to do a book signing at the Barnes and Noble by Vanderbilt on West End on Wednesday of next week. So if people want an autographed copy, they can come there on Wednesday of next week, and I'll do the only Nashville book signing that we have scheduled right now is there. But I've done everything that I can do at this point, and now it's kind of word of mouth that starts to take over and determine how many, you know, and how long the book keeps selling.
Clay, what's the best review that you've read of your book? What's the worst review that you've read of your book so far?
I thought the New Yorker did a really fair piece. I mean, I was stunned that they wrote several thousand words about me in the New Yorker magazine. I mean, there are a lot of different reviews out there. I'm sitting on the review page right now at Amazon. The most recent review is from C. Kleinpeter, and it says, "What a joke. Clay Travis is a hate monger and a troll, and his book is terrible," and he gave me 1 star. And then the next one down says, "Clay is great. He says what some sports media think but are afraid to say. He speaks the facts and adds in some good humor." I mean, I don't know. You can scroll through there. 64 customer reviews up, and 81% of them gave me 5 stars so far. So I'll take that.
Have you not read a bad review from a publication so far?
I don't. I mean, Deadspin, I didn't ever read that full report. I don't know if that was a review of the book. You told me about that. I mean, and obviously that was out there circulating shortly after the New Yorker piece. But no, I haven't. I don't know how many book reviews have been written, first of all. I haven't actually seen that many of them. So if somebody has written a really bad book review, I haven't seen it. But to be fair, I haven't seen any great book reviews either. When you ask me for a review, I'm thinking you mean like an Amazon review.
Clay, what happened last week in Knoxville? How much of that is on Butch Jones? Because you can answer that two different ways. It's either this guy's been gone since November, or this guy brought in recruits that everyone touted as legit, and they're not that good.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of moving parts here, and I think the most important is the 6 turnovers. Because anytime you turn the ball over 6 times, it's hard to judge what the overall quality of a team is. So to me, the biggest takeaway here is the 6 turnovers make it very hard to judge what actually happened in that game. And I understand people out there who are Florida fans that are going to say, "Oh, you know what? Well, Florida created all these turnovers. We created that situation where we could allow that to happen." I think there's some truth to that a little bit, but honestly, fumbles in particular are kind of aberrant statistical results. and you typically, because once the ball hits the ground, you don't know who's going to be able to recover it. At best, it's 50-50. I think Tennessee had 7 turnovers a couple of years ago in a game against Texas A&M, if I'm not mistaken. There were a lot of big turnovers, I thought, in this game. And so I think it's hard to judge from a turnover perspective. I think it's going to be ugly against Auburn. I think it's going to be ugly against Georgia this weekend. I think it's going to be ugly against Alabama. But I think, honestly, what's disappointing to Tennessee fans is I don't think Florida's that much better than Tennessee. That should have been a 50-50 kind of game, or at least one that went into the fourth quarter instead of Tennessee tripping all over itself and falling apart.
How do you judge Jeremy Pruitt and his staff this year? If there's a realistic barometer now from what you've seen out of Tennessee, what do you want to see from him moving forward?
I think probably in November, good defense. And a really solid recruiting class. I'm kind of over the idea that year one is going to tell you very much, because I think you look at what happened with Georgia under Kirby Smart, and I think you look at what happened at Nick Saban with Alabama under Nick Saban. Both those guys go, I believe, 7-6 in year one with teams that were, I think, a lot more talented than the team that Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt inherited. So I have always said, and I've been saying this since I was on 3HL back in the day, in college football, it's year two. Year two is when you can tell, is this guy going to be a really good coach or not? So in year two, I would like to see a big uptick for Jeremy Pruitt if things are going well. Year one, I mean, obviously I don't want Tennessee to go 3-9 and 0-8 in the SEC, of course. I don't think that would be a good sign. But anything from 4-8, 5-7, if they got fortunate and got to 6-6, I don't think it tells us that much. I think we'll learn a lot more in year two.
Spread is monstrous. Chad has theorized that Kirby Smart takes it easy on an old friend in the end. You factor that into what you think about, what is it, Chad, 31?
Yeah, I think it's 31.5 now.
Yeah, I didn't bet that. I don't typically like to bet massive spread games, and I didn't bet Alabama 49-point favorite over whoever, Louisiana Monroe or Lafayette or whoever they're playing this weekend. I don't think Tennessee's very good. I don't think they can score very many points, but I don't think they're as bad as they showed against Florida. If I had to bet, I would probably take Tennessee plus 31. But I don't like this bet, because it also wouldn't stun me if Georgia came out, got up immediately 42-0, and then the rest of the game was just kind of run the ball and don't do very much. I mean, I don't think Georgia's going to come out and score 70 points on Tennessee or anything like that. But I also don't predict that this game is any kind of contest in the second half.
Midday 180, served up by Wendy's. Clay Travis is presented by the Home Loan Expert. Another segment with him. Clay, we've got Kentucky hosting South Carolina this week. Who do you favor in that and why?
Kentucky. They've won 4 games in a row. I like Kentucky and the under. I love Benny Snell Jr. I think Kentucky, in both of their SEC wins so far against both Florida and Mississippi State, has dominated the line of scrimmage. I think this will be an ugly, low-scoring game, and I like the Wildcats at home to find a way to get the win.
And how much are you looking forward to Penn State, Ohio State?
A ton. I'm flying up there tomorrow. I've not hidden it. My wife is good friends with James Franklin's wife, and I'm obviously become decent friends with James Franklin too. And so we're going up there, and I'm not going up as a media member. I'm going up as somebody who's just looking forward to watching a good football game between Penn State and Ohio State. I've never been to Happy Valley, never been up there to see a game. So we're going in for 24 hours up and back in one night. And I can't wait. I think it's going to be in a phenomenal setting, phenomenal game, and I can't wait to be there.
Kirby. Not
you
me.
Know Kirby.
Yeah, we're going to throw Kirby in the bus.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out. I was like, oh, my God, did I lose him? Tell Kirby I said hi.
Clay, we don't often ask guests to defend their wife on air, but I have to ask you, fair or foul on this, your wife is a Michigan grad, correct?
That is correct.
She tweets a lot of love for Penn State, even more so than Michigan, as a Michigan grad because of her friendship with the Franklins. Fair or foul to basically switch allegiances is what it looks like to me.
Yeah, it's always an interesting question that I've had in general. So first of all, she's a Michigan grad. It's not like she loses sleep over whether Michigan wins or loses. So like you and I are big Tennessee fans. She is a Michigan grad, not a big Michigan fan. It's not like she started going to games when she was a kid. It's not like she you know, has ever thought about breaking anything over the outcome of a game, which I would imagine many people listening to us right now have either done or certainly thought about in their life. So she's a Michigan fan because she's a Michigan grad, but she has like the best kind of way that she's a fan. She doesn't feel that bad if they lose, and she enjoys if she wins, and she's really good friends with Fumi. So I've always thought that this is an interesting, and that's James Franklin's wife. I've always thought this was an interesting question, you know, in general. What would it take for someone like me or you who grew up a lifelong fan of a team to switch allegiances? And I remember when I was in law school, we got into a debate about this because Ron Zook's daughter was going to Vanderbilt, and Ron Zook at the time was coaching at Florida. And my argument was that even me, as big of a Tennessee fan as I am, if you marry into the family, at some point you become a fan of whatever team, you know, your father-in-law is coaching, because you would get to know the players, because you would know the people involved and everything else. So I've always been a relationships over lifestyle person. Does that make sense? Like, I'm voting, I'll tell people, I'm voting for Carl Dean for governor, the Democrat who's running for governor, because Carl Dean was my professor at Vanderbilt Law School, and I really like him personally. I know him. I don't know Bill Lee. If I had been a student of Bill Lee, I probably would vote for him too. So that to me is a little bit of kind of the same thing. If you are allied to a political party, my position has always been, if I had a friend who was running for office, I would vote for him regardless of what political party they're in. Same thing, by the way, is happening up in the Goodlettsville area where I grew up. One of the guys I used to play Little League Baseball with and grew up with, Johnny Garrett, is running for state house as a Republican. And I went and spoke at his fundraiser, and I would have spoken at his fundraiser if he were a Democrat too, just because he's a friend of mine. So I always think that's kind of interesting. I guess I would go friend over loyalty to a team, because ultimately I value friendship more than I do my team.
Clay, your book sales were plummeting when you made that Carl Dean admission, but then they went right back up when you said you're also going to endorse a Republican. So congratulations on that. You just leveled out with both of those admissions right there.
That's what I do. It's like Seinfeld. I'm always ending up even.
Yeah, that's right. Clay, if we went through your high school yearbook and looked through everything, how many jobs would you be disqualified for if we looked through your high school yearbook?
Well, first of all, I could prove I was a virgin just by showing my high school yearbook photo. That would have been a great way for Kavanaugh to start off if he had a really embarrassing high school yearbook photo. He's like, some people have questioned whether I was a virgin in high school or not. As evidence of the fact that I was a virgin, I would like to enter this photo in as evidence, to the official record. That would have been an hysterical part of what was otherwise a pretty serious and sober discussion yesterday. I don't know. I haven't looked at the yearbook recently, but I would, first of all, I think people expect so much worse of me. My standard is different than certainly a Supreme Court justice. I don't think that there's anything that's that inflammatory in the Martin Luther King Jr. Magnet High School yearbooks from years 1991 to 97, when I was going to 7th through 12th grade there in downtown Nashville. But I would imagine that if somebody went through it, they could find something and be like, oh my God, I can't believe this was listed as a senior superlative, or I can't believe that this photo made it through. I mean, on some level, I think that reasonable people, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, think that it's pretty insane for a 53-year-old man to be being quizzed about what's written in a high school yearbook, regardless of what your political persuasions are. And so I thought that entire thing was farcical in terms of referring to his high school buddies and like everything else. I mean, there are lots of reasons you cannot like Brett Kavanaugh and not support his being on the Supreme Court, but because of what happened in a high school yearbook, I think is pretty laughably absurd.
Clay, do you still have political aspirations? I think people are going to ask that question naturally with the nature of your latest book. Is that something that still interests you, that you want to do down the line?
I don't know. I have to make, first of all, I wasn't born with any money. Neither of my parents ever made $50,000 a year. We grew up in Goodlettsville, Tennessee, and went to public school K through 12. Everybody who runs for political office is rich. So I am making money now, but I think I have like the best jobs imaginable. I get to do talk radio. I get to do television on Lock It In on FS1. I get to write a book about whatever I want to write a book about. And I get to do a Periscope and a Facebook every day. In the afternoon, talking about the biggest stories in the world of sports, politics, media, whatever else. So I think I have the best jobs in America right now. I have to make so much more money in order to even remotely contemplate that. And I'm 39. And plus, then toss in the fact that I got a 10, an 8, and a 4-year-old. I've got a pretty good lifestyle right now, but it's a busy one. So maybe in a decade, maybe in 2 decades, but I'd have to get filthy rich, and I'd have to decide that I want that challenge. The one thing I can say, and I say this for everybody out there, is I'm a person who likes to try new challenges. So when I started writing and then I came into radio and started doing 3HL daily, the question was, can I do daily radio? And then when I started doing a national radio show by myself, the question was, can I do a national daily radio show by myself? And now I'm experimenting on television. Can I be good on television daily for an hour? I like new challenges. So in that respect, yes, it's something that sounds intriguing. But again, I'd have to get, I don't know, my number is $25 million in the bank before I'd even consider politics at this point. I'm not there yet.
So, I mean, this is a big headline to me. Clay Travis, who constantly brags about how much money he has, doesn't have enough money to run for office. I just wanted to reconfirm that on the record.
I think being a multimillionaire is great, and that's a lot more money than most people have, but it ain't that much money to run a political campaign. I got to get to $25 million to feel comfortable running for political office.
Clay, most of the golfers in the Ryder Cup, they have a lot of money. By the way, spoiler alert for those recording the Ryder Cup and going home. Europe swept the afternoon matches. First time either side has gone 4-0 in one session since 1989. They lead 5-3 after the first day of the tournament. How into the Ryder Cup are you, Clay? How much more into it would you be if it didn't butt up against football season and a football weekend?
I think that everything golf and baseball do would be infinitely better if it didn't happen during football season. So I like the Ryder Cup. I love golf. I just got invited to my first ever Pro-Am down in May, and I think I'm going to get to play with John Daly, which I can't even imagine that duo, what that's going to be like. I'm awful at golf. I'm afraid that I'm going to kill somebody in the tee box. I look atrocious when I swing. My swing is even worse than the results are, and the results are not good. But I love watching golf. I really do. So I had it on this morning. You came on my radio show this morning, early in the morning. Thanks for coming on in the 6 o'clock hour in Nashville. And I had it on and was watching it during the commercial breaks, even while I was doing interviews. I was paying attention to it. I think it's phenomenal. I think it would be better if it were in August instead of in September. And I feel that way even about the Major League Baseball playoffs. I mean, as much as I like paying attention and having games to pay attention to in Major League Baseball, I wish they were going on in August before the football season officially started, because I feel like October is kind of an embarrassment of riches to have everything going all at once.
Clay, you're advising the NFL on this roughing the passer issue. What would you tell them?
That they've gone too far in trying to legislate and protect the quarterback. I think football, and this is a broader issue, I think football is a dangerous sport that you can't play safely. And I think at this point in time, players assume a large amount of risk when they step on the field. I understand the necessity and importance of protecting the quarterback, but I think they've gone too far when they say, hey, you can't land on the quarterback going forward. I almost wish they would say, and I know this is controversial because they always say, oh, you can't judge a judgment call. Why is that the standard? You know, when I look at what's being challenged, I don't know that it would hurt to have the ability to challenge whether a flag should be thrown in an NFL game when you look at how significant, for instance, pass interference is. And if you had the absolute best official in the entire land who was watching that, and they would say, you know what, we're going to flag this and say it shouldn't have been flagged on, you know, Tuesday when we officially notify the team of all the results and calls in their game, why can't you review a judgment call? It's one that, you know, and it's a good debate. I mean, everybody out there is like, oh, you can't review a judgment call. And I'm like, why? If a judgment call is wrong, isn't whether the ball came out as a fumble a judgment call? Isn't whether or not an interception was made a judgment call? Why do we treat like a holding call or a pass interference call as something other than what it is, also a judgment call? And sometimes officials get judgment calls wrong. So I understand the concept of it would take too long, but why can't you give a team an opportunity to challenge one call that they think isn't justified every game for a holding or a pass interference?
Clay Travis is with us every Friday, 11 a.m., presented by thehomeloanexpert.com. Clay, always appreciate it, man. Always enjoy it.
Appreciate y'all having me, and I hope to see a bunch of people Wednesday of next week out for that book signing-only event I'm going to do in Nashville. So hopefully people will be able to make it out. Thank you all.
Thanks, Clay. Thank you, Clay.